Prepare to discard your mental blinders. Counterthink with Mike Adams, live on InfoWars.com.
Hello and welcome to Counterthink. This is Mike Adams, your host for the next hour. We've got a five-part broadcast for you today on a very important topic for our time, something that you may not have considered. I titled this broadcast, Why Democrats Are Doomed. And I don't just mean that politically. I don't mean that they're going to lose every election. I mean Democrats are physically doomed to extinction based on principles of natural selection. And that's the topic of this story. And I know you're thinking, wow, what are you talking about? How could that be? Well, I've done an analysis, a detailed analysis, including some sort of a rudimentary epidemiological look at outbreaks and collapse scenarios. And it turns out that in almost every imaginable scenario, Democrats die out in huge, huge numbers. And of course, although we don't ever want such a thing to happen, we don't want people to suffer in an outbreak or suffer in a, you know, like a collapse or a nuclear apocalypse. I'll talk about all these scenarios in this broadcast. We don't want people to suffer. And at the same time, we have to take an honest look at cause and effect. And it turns out that Democrats are currently only in power because of circumstances that could change dramatically with one event. In other words, we are one event away from Democrats being utterly wiped out across not just the United States, but similar socialist-minded people being wiped out across the planet, depending on the scenario. So in today's broadcast, I'm going to be covering many of those different scenarios, and we'll discuss why people who tend to be like Democrats, why they are most likely to actually die. And again, we don't want it to happen. We're not celebrating it. We're not happy about it. I'm just talking about cause and effect. It turns out that a more individual liberty mindset is what will survive long term, survive these natural selection events. And humanity, for a long period of time, hundreds of years now, has really not had much of a natural selection type of event. There's been no test for humanity. Survival has been easy. You might even say unearned in many cases, where for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, let's say, humans had to strive for survival. They had to fight against, weather. They had to build shelter. They had to scramble for food. They had to build rudimentary societies, and they had to apply their knowledge and skills and intelligence in order to survive. Today, the dumbest imaginable people survive without trying. The worst ideas in the world survive. And in fact, there are entire societies built around really bad ideas that almost universally exist on the left wing of the spectrum. Like Venezuela, for example. It's a collapsing socialist utopia. It doesn't work, though. The ideas are broken. And many of those people are now literally dying and starving to death and dying from, you know, lack of basic hygiene, for example. The medical system has collapsed. The sewer system has collapsed in many liberal cities. In fact, in places like Haiti, in the capital city of Haiti, there's really no functioning sewer system. It's just a series of large holes in the ground. And people die of cholera there. You know, so liberal ideas or socialist ideas that tend to aggregate people into cities, they are actually building their own death traps. And in this episode of Counterthink, we're going to cover those death traps, why they exist, how things are shaping toward a major, let's say, a challenge to human survival, what I call a natural selection event, or some people have called it Darwinism. You know, natural selection, survival of the fittest, whatever you want to call it. This is, there are events coming. There are events, I'll talk about space weather and how space weather will wipe out much of human civilization sooner or later, how NASA has already essentially confirmed that this will happen eventually and how it has happened in human history. And there are many, many other scenarios unfolding in the near future. So stay with me here on Counterthink. We'll be right back after this break.
Warning. Take the red pill before viewing. Counterthink with Mike Adams.
All right, continuing in part two of this important five-part broadcast, you're watching or listening to Counterthink. My name is Mike Adams. This show is broadcast every Sunday at 6 p.m. at Infowars.com. And all the video episodes are also available at Reel.video, which is the new YouTube alternative. So be sure to check out Reel.video, where you will find these episodes under the Counterthink channel with a lot of other interesting videos. So as I opened up this broadcast, I presented the idea that Democrats are doomed. In other words, left-leaning, socialist-leaning individuals will not pass the next big test for humanity. A natural selection event, in other words, is coming, and it tends to be Democrats who will fail to survive, which means that people who have that kind of mindset, Democrats, socialism, communism, they will not represent the future of the human gene pool. The future will belong to those who are adaptable, who have self-reliance, and who can survive difficult events. Those people tend to be libertarian and conservative individuals. They tend to have faith. They tend to believe in God. They tend to live in rural areas. They tend to have hands-on skills where they can repair things, they can fix things, they can grow food, they can carry buckets, you know, they can handle ranch animals. Lots of rural skills that help people survive. Whereas Democrats, they tend to live in cities. In fact, just moving to a city tends to make you more socialist over time. This has been proven in numerous scientific studies. And most of the people who live in high-density cities, not just in America, but around the world, tend to be left-leaning, socialist-leaning individuals. It's almost kind of a natural thing where if you're living in close quarters with a lot of other people, you require a lot of additional cooperation, and you're also able to delegate tasks to other people. Like you can dial 911 and have police come save you, perhaps, depending on the city. I guess in Chicago, that doesn't really work. But in some cities, the police will show up, and they will bring usually men with guns to help solve your problem. Well, if you live in the country, you are the man with a gun or the woman with a gun. You are your own 911. You don't have the ability to just delegate all these tasks to someone else. And whether it comes to, you know, police protection or fire protection or even food and water, people who live in rural areas who tend to be more conservative and more libertarian, they are more self-reliant, which gives them abilities and a mindset to survive all kinds of events that could take place that would kill off people who tend to live in cities. So let's take a look at some of those events, because this is really crucial for you to, you know, to understand the risks that might be facing you if you still live in a city or near a city, or perhaps the advantages that you can enjoy if you live in a rural area. You might want to think about relocating after listening to this broadcast. So the number one, I think the number one highest risk of a global population collapse or global die-off is a viral outbreak, i.e. a superbug. And under this explanation, I'm including both inadvertent release of superbugs as well as deliberate release of bioweapons. So there are cases where, you know, there are random mutations of viral strains in the wild, and these random mutations can infect human populations. This has happened, you know, on the African continent for a very long period of time. You know, there's bird flu outbreaks and so on. There's Ebola outbreaks, Marburg virus, and many others. So there's that. But then there's also the weaponized strains where, you know, every major military power in the world has a bioweapons department. And they research and develop biological weapons, even though this has been banned by a treaty, you know, from, what was it, the 1980s or 1990s, there was a treaty that said you can't work on bioweapons. Yeah, right. Nobody follows that. Of course they're working on their bioweapons. They've got them in freezers. I mean, the U.S. Army has admitted it, and they've occasionally lost some of the samples. And turned out that some viruses, you know, got out of the lab, and, you know, they had a little bit of an alert problem there. So whether it's deliberate or inadvertent, it's going to affect people who live in cities more than people who live in countries. That's because cities have very high population density. And in the cities, of course, you have the ability to spread viruses much more rapidly. People are in contact with surfaces that can spread infectious disease much more quickly, such as doorknobs or public transportation. They go on the subway. They get on the bus. They're sharing germs, in essence, in a city. When you're living in close proximity to others, it breeds infectious disease normally. And then if you inject a bioweapon into that scenario, or something gets accidentally released, or something mutates in the wild and then gets into a city, the consequences can be quite devastating, because now the infection rate just goes through the roof. And most of these viral strains, by the way, are destroyed by sunlight exposure. So if you go out into the country, now you've got more open space, you've got more natural light, more sunlight actually denaturing these viral strains. It's actually damaging the protein chains on the viral strains, making them no longer capable of infecting people. But in the cities, a lot of people live indoors. A lot of people walk around or even are transported in underground scenarios like parking garages, subways. They're indoors a lot, in offices and so on. Whereas out in the country, you know, more rural people tend to be outdoors more. They have to walk across, you know, maybe a field. They have to work outside. Maybe they're a rancher. Maybe they're in construction. You know, lots of scenarios where people are outside. Maybe they have ranch animals to take care of, or dogs that they take care of, and they walk their dogs, for example. So rural living gives you protection, natural protection against infectious disease outbreaks, whereas city living makes you highly vulnerable. So if there is a release of a sufficiently deadly superbug strain, which, by the way, the WHO and the CDC and virtually all health authorities are warning about, and by the way, we are creating a human petri dish situation that will breed superbugs because of the rampant abuse of antibiotics in modern medicine. Doctors are overprescribing antibiotics. They're actually creating superbugs such as MRSA and C.diff, which is in hospitals, killing people, killing tens of thousands of people every year right now. But as this takes effect, it's going to tend to wipe out people in the cities more than people in rural areas. It's simply cause and effect. And there is no informed epidemiologist or virologist who would disagree with this assessment. It's basically statistics and means of transmission. I don't know if you recall, but the Ebola outbreak from a couple of years ago found that there was a transmission vector through the air where someone could sneeze or cough, and they could transmit Ebola several feet away. So imagine people going out to movie theaters, restaurants, public transportation, standing in line at a nightclub, you know, standing in line, using a taxi, getting in an Uber car, you know, sharing the door handle on an Uber car. All of these things, all you have to do is touch a surface and then touch the corner of your eye or touch your mouth or touch your nose. Boom, you are infected. And those infections can be fatal. And there are crazy superbugs now circulating in the wild that have very high fatality rates, and others have lower fatality rates with much higher transmission rates. So they're able to infect a large number of people without necessarily killing them all, which actually increases the risk of transmission, because living carriers tend to transmit these diseases more than dead people. So if you die, you stop transmitting it for the most part, because you're not walking around touching things. If you're alive but infected, then you are a carrier, and carriers who are, you know, alive and infected are spreading the disease. And this describes city life. This is exactly it. There's also more sexual interactions. People who live in cities tend to have more sex partners. So a lot of these, such as Ebola viral strains, they can be spread through sexual transmission. Ebola is a sexually transmitted disease. And I saw a study recently that talked about how Ebola can be transmitted literally years after the patient has been cured. It's still alive and viable in semen, which means, of course, that you can give Ebola to somebody years after you've had it and overcome it. If you survived it, you could still give it to somebody. So just like HIV and AIDS is rampant in cities more than rural areas, many other infectious diseases can follow the same vector. So there's a lot more straight ahead. Part three coming up. You're watching Counterthink with Mike Adams. We'll be right back with more.
The brain-dead propaganda of the status quo.
This is Counterthink with Mike Adams, right here on InfoWars.
All right, we're back on Counterthink with the episode called Why Democrats Are Doomed. And as we've covered so far, you know, Democrats tend to live in cities, and it makes them extremely vulnerable to certain types of natural selection events that will tend to cause a massive die-off of those people who live in the cities, who tend to be Democrats, right? And, you know, Ebola, for example, was just one thing that was on the radar in the last couple of years, showing that it's incredibly easy for someone to come into America as a, let's say, a biological weapons terrorist, and then to release that weapon in America and then effectively kill off populations that predominantly live in cities. You know, China has a very advanced biological weapons development, and if they wanted to do something like that, they could just send an infected person into, let's say, San Francisco. And all they got to do is go down in the BART station tunnels, where there's already people shooting up with heroin and crapping all over the floor and coughing everywhere, and just join them, you know, just start coughing and touching everything. And it wouldn't even look unusual in San Francisco, because that city is already a cesspool, you know. So, I mean, if someone wanted to do that, that would be an obvious place for them to start that act of terrorism and start killing off people, you know, in a place like San Francisco, sadly. And again, we don't want to see any of this happen. This is a warning. What I'm trying to put out there is a warning that putting people in these very dirty, unsanitary conditions, living in close quarters in cities, not being self-reliant, not having access to sunlight, not having good nutrition, all of these things contribute to the risk of vulnerability to not just infectious disease, but other events that I'll talk about next that threaten human civilization. But by all my calculations, it looks like Democrats are going to lose a much larger percentage of people than libertarian people or conservatives or, you know, Republicans or independent people. And the whole point of this broadcast is to explain why that is. So let's look at another scenario. Even though infectious disease is probably the most likely event to happen that could threaten world population, and it has happened before, obviously, you know, the 1918 flu virus pandemic and other pandemics throughout world history since the beginning of human civilization, frankly, there have been pandemics. And the vaccine industry can't save you. They don't know what they're doing. And they lie most of the time. Most of their vaccines don't even work when it comes to infectious disease. I mean, even flu shots don't even prevent the flu. They're based on strains from last year's flu. They don't attack this year's flu in most cases. It's insane. Let's talk about a grid down scenario. So let's say there's an EMP weapon attack on America, or there's a grid down scenario from a Carrington event, a solar flare that causes essentially an EMP wave, electromagnetic pulse, to take out much of the power grid in places like North America. Now, what that could do is, of course, collapse the infrastructure that supports cities. Well, cities are artificial constructs. Cities rely on the importation of electricity, water, food, and fuel. Those are the big four things, but there's also medicine and other things. But those big four, without an electrical grid infrastructure, those four things stop getting delivered. You don't have gasoline. The gas stations run dry. The pumps don't work anyway because the pumps are out. You don't have food because that comes from farms, obviously, outside the city. You don't have water because in most cities, the water comes from outside the city and it's pumped out of the ground using electrical pumps. And, you know, you don't have medicine. You don't have even electricity to power essential services, nothing. When you lose the power grid, cities become death traps. Before very long, I mean within 24 hours, you start getting mass looting, riots, you start getting desperation, people start dying of heat or cold, depending on the season, people start dying in hospitals, but you get chaos, which is really how a lot of people will end up dying. You get chaos and looting because the cops get overrun very quickly. Cops are barely able to keep up with crime on a normal day, not even considering a day where, you know, the zombies let loose and go on a zombie attack across your city. So the power grid, you might say, well, there's no chance that that's going to happen. Actually, there is. NASA, and I've quoted this many times on naturalnews.com, NASA put out a study several years ago that talked about the risk of a Carrington event, which is a solar flare that can knock out the power grid. And remember, we had one in the 1800s. I forgot what year it was, but it was a huge event, and it knocked out telegraph substations because they were connected by the wires, and then the wires magnified and carried the electricity from the EMP, the solar flare pulse, and it fried the simple electronics of that day. Well, today, the electronics are far more delicate. The circuit boards use much smaller circuits. They're a lot more vulnerable to changes in current. Just a little bit of current can fry the circuit boards in vehicles, in radios, in, you know, your laser rangefinder for your rifle. You know, all these things can be fried. Computers, switches, hubs, routers, all these things that power the internet. And NASA says that the chance of this happening is about 12% every 10 years. So you could say roughly it's about a 1% chance per year, you know, just roughly speaking. Well, that's a pretty big chance considering that all of modern human civilization is resting on this. And other estimates show that if there is a power grid down scenario from a solar flare or an EMP weapon, that the loss of population in America would be up to 90% of the population, up to 90% death rate. Well, I ask you this question. Which 90% would be least likely to survive such a depopulation outcome? And the answer is people who live in cities and people who tend to be Democrats because they're the least prepared. They're not into prepping. They don't have firearms typically. They don't have hands-on skills very often. They don't have a mindset of survival or self-reliance. You know, they're good at other things. They're good at sculpture and ballet, you know, and maybe academia. Maybe they're a professor at a university. Well, there's going to be a lot of dead professors after such an event because being a professor might make you an expert in the area that you're teaching. Maybe you're a anthropology teacher and you are an expert on the primates of Indonesia. How does that help you if the power grid goes down? It doesn't. You need to become an expert in how to work a Glock. How do you fix jams in your gun? How do you filter water? How do you build a water filter? Where do you find water? How do you navigate with a compass, not a GPS? Because the GPS doesn't work anymore, right? So you can be the smartest, highest IQ person in the world, but if you're not an expert in survival, then your chances are quite diminished of being able to survive such an event. So people who live in cities, they may be very smart. They may even be good people. You know, I'm not saying they're bad people, but they're not ready to survive these events that are statistically coming because of space weather. I mean, think about it. NASA says even space weather, you can't control it. The sun just flings out solar flares every once in a while. Well, all the time, actually, almost every day. Most of those solar flares don't hit our planet, thankfully. About once every, you know, 100 years or so, according to NASA, one of them hits us. And when that happens, the entire power grid goes down because it's built on electronics that won't survive a solar flare. When that happens, do you want to be in a city that's dependent on electricity for food, water, fuel, emergency services, everything? No, because it's a death trap. That's my point. So we'll talk about this more as we continue in part four. You're watching Counterthink or listening to it on the radio. My name's Mike Adams. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more.
Exposing the corporate media assaults on your reality. It's Counterthink with Mike Adams.
So what I've put together here so far, I hope, is a fairly convincing overview of why living in cities makes you vulnerable to any kind of a population collapse scenario. And so far, we've discussed just two of those, which is an outbreak of a superbug or an infectious disease bioweapon. And secondly, an EMP attack or a solar flare or a grid down scenario that craters the power grid, creating or transforming cities into death traps, which are very difficult to escape. I want to talk about that escape for just a second here. Now, the safest place to be in a collapse is out in the country. And in fact, some people believe you want to be at least one full gasoline tank away from a city, meaning that if someone is in a car or a truck and they have a full tank of gas, how far can they get? You want to be farther than that. But that's actually hard to accomplish. There aren't that many places in America that are, frankly, more than one gas tank away from a major city. Certainly not, you know, east of the Mississippi. West of the Mississippi, you can find places like that. You know, you go out to West Texas or you go out to I don't know, Eastern Washington, places like that. You can accomplish that, but it's not so easy. I say that really a more practical and more rational strategy is to be more than walking distance away from a city. Now, when people panic in a city, if there's a collapse, and let's say it's an EMP attack, the cars won't work anyway, and at least many of them won't. Or the roads, in some scenarios, the roads can be blockaded by National Guard troops, or even the U.S. military, for all we know, depending on the scenario. Could be martial law. Could be civil war. Could be lots of scenarios where the roads are blocked. In fact, some of the law enforcement that I've spoken with say that some of the plans involve quarantining entire cities, where the State Guard or National Guard, they just sit on the major highways going in and out of the city, and they just block people from passing through those checkpoints. So a lot of people won't be able to drive out of a city, depending on the scenario. But people can walk out, and it's hard to stop people from walking out because there's so many ways to walk out of a city. But most people who live in a city don't know how to walk out of a city. This is the thing. So I say, you know, if you're like 2 or 3 days walking distance away from a city, you're in pretty good shape. And that's only about 100 miles, if you think about it. I mean, most people who live in cities can't walk 100 miles ever. Not even just 2 or 3 days, but ever. I mean, you have to be, I guess, in pretty decent shape, and they're going to try to carry a few things with them. Of course, they'll start ditching things every mile. They're like, oh my God, you know, ounces and pounds are pain, right? This stuff gets heavy. After, you know, ounces equal pounds, pounds equal pain. The stuff, you don't want to carry it. So they'll start ditching all their stuff. Most people can't walk 100 miles. I don't know about you. I know I can walk 100 miles because I walk multiple miles every day like it's nothing because I live on a ranch and I walk my animals and so on. Now, some people have bikes and they can bike out. Can you bike 100 miles in 2 days? Absolutely. No problem to bike 100 miles in a couple of days. You don't even have to go that fast, right? It says leisurely biking. You can bike 100 miles in 1 day if you're committed to it. That's not a big deal. But all you got to do to be safe from this exodus out of the cities is be far enough away that the number of zombies coming out of the cities is relatively small, and so small that you're able to defend yourself if the zombies try to attack you at, you know, your house or your ranch or your community. And I'm using the word zombies here in kind of a satirical way. By zombies, what I mean is people who didn't prepare, people who are like clueless trying to escape the cities. Just mindless. That's why I call them zombies, because they're mindless. And they like to groan and whine a lot. They're kind of cry bullies and snowflakes. They're like zombie flakes walking on foot, you know, lumbering around. Give me food, water, you know. And they want to steal everything from you, because these people who tend to live in cities, they tend to be socialists. So they think your stuff belongs to them. Like, they'll show up at your place and they're like, give me your food storage because you have too much. You're hoarding. Give me my portion, they'll say. You know, this is like classic socialism. And what's going to happen is, again, what I call a natural selection event, where some people don't survive the stresses of the environment. Because I don't know about you, but a lot of people that I know are not going to just hand over all their belongings to a bunch of zombies that show up. You know, they're going to protect their property. They're going to protect their family. They're going to protect their own lives and their homes and their communities. So being, you know, escaping a city is going to be high on the list of people who get trapped in the cities. Your job as a survivor is to be able to handle that outflow. And yeah, you can help people if you're able to. My plan is to send people to the local church, and I'm prepared to make donations to the local church. Food donations, clothing, blankets, emergency medicine, sterilization or sanitation supplies, things like that. And that's my plan. But you may not be in a situation where you can help a group of 50 other people. You know, who knows? That depends on your preparedness and what your situation is. So number one, be prepared to survive and defend yourself, because not all the people coming out of the cities are going to be nice people. In fact, many of them may be gangs, armed gangs. And they might be on not just bicycles, they could be on motorcycles, because motorcycles have a long range, you know, because of using very little fuel. And they might be pretending to be police, or they might actually be the police. I know that, like, liberal police, a lot of liberal cities that have police, like Portland, Oregon, or heck, even Austin, Texas, some of these cops are not well prepared. I know, because I know a lot of cops. I know ones that are super prepared. I know ones that wouldn't make it 5 minutes in a collapse. They can't even shoot the side of a barn. You know, did you see that video the other day where this was in L.A. and the cops were chasing a perp who got out of the car and ran into a Trader Joe's, and the cops, well, the perp apparently fired a couple of shots at the cops. So this cop, and you can see it on the body cam, he just opens fire on this perp with his, looks like a Glock pistol. He just opens fire, and he ends up shooting and killing the Trader Joe's manager. And I'm like, didn't anybody ever teach you? You know, it was rule number 4 about shooting. What's behind your target? You know, you're responsible for every bullet that leaves your weapon, right? Did you ever stop to think what's behind the perp? Turns out it was the Trader Joe's manager, who was like a 20-something gal, I think, and she was killed. And the LAPD is like, well, we're so sorry that we killed an innocent Trader Joe's manager. Well, maybe you shouldn't just randomly fire bullets into, like, dark glass in a retail establishment where there are people inside. I don't know if you ever thought about that as a LAPD cop, but I think these people are clueless, frankly. I mean, my God, the gun training that I've had, you know how much I would have been screamed at by my instructors if I just opened fire on a storefront because there's one bad guy that walked in there? Are you kidding me? Really? Come on, cops. Get a grip on it, man. Okay, I'm running out of time here, so let me get to the next scenarios. All right. In every scenario that we could discuss here, and I'll list some, it always comes back to the fact that cities are death traps, and living in the country makes you more insulated and more self-reliant and more likely to survive. And remember, the context of this talk is that there is a major natural selection event coming. You know, humanity has pushed things to the limit in so many ways. There's an economic reckoning coming. You could call it a global debt collapse. It will be devastating. Nations will fall. There will be mass starvation, kind of like Venezuela today, but it will happen in many countries around the world. There's a military invasion scenario. What if China decides to invade America militarily? What if there's a civil war, actual war breaking out across America between, you know, pro-America forces and anti-America forces, who call themselves Democrats, by the way? What if that war breaks out? You know, how can you survive if you're living in a city and all your supplies are blockaded? I mean, how hard would it be for, let's say, a group of patriots to blow up the power substation to the city, to the water supply pumps that serve Los Angeles, let's say? I mean, that's a simple thing for people to do. I'm not, we don't hope that ever happens. I'm just saying, tactically, those kinds of activities are very easy. Cities can be blockaded. They can be, you know, embargoed. They can be cut off from electricity or water or food very easily just by controlling a few key roads and a few power substations. It's a very simple thing. So people live in cities. They think that they're, you know, safe and that everything's protected and they can dial 911. No, you're very vulnerable in a city. We'll talk about more as we continue. You're listening to Counterthink. Stay with me.
Prepare to discard your mental blinders. Counterthink with Mike Adams is now live on Infowars.com.
We're back on Counterthink. Thanks for listening in, tuning in today. Let's go through some of the additional scenarios that could happen. We've got, let's say, if there's an asteroid strike in the ocean that sends a massive tidal wave that inundates coastal regions of the world, well, who gets caught in that? It's mostly liberal cities. If you think about it, it's New York, it's Boston, it's Los Angeles. You know, the coasts are heavily populated with Democrats and liberals, and that's actually who's most vulnerable to tidal waves. And an asteroid, I mean, think about 75%, or maybe it's two-thirds, somewhere between there, of the Earth's surface is covered with water. So if an asteroid hits the planet, it's likely to hit water, not land. And if it hits water, then it spreads the damage and devastation to all the coastal regions, almost globally. And the most likely hit is, of course, the Pacific Ocean. And a hit in the Pacific Ocean would just inundate and wipe out Hawaii, you know, the coastal regions of Alaska, coastal west coast of Canada, of course, Oregon, Washington, California, you know, parts of Mexico and so on. It would be devastating. But it would also be devastating even to Australia, Taiwan, Japan, Southeast Asia, you know, the Fiji Islands. I mean, lots of regions would be devastated by that. But in the U.S., most of those regions are predominantly populated by Democrats. A nuclear war, whether that's war with, you know, Russia, let's say, or North Korea or China, again, it's the cities that become the death zones. It's the cities that are the targets of nuclear war. If you think about a nuclear war, is an enemy nation going to waste, so-called waste, an ICBM on some country targets? Are they going to try to bomb, you know, Billy Bob out in East Texas or, you know, Louisiana, the Bayou? No, they're going to be bombing strategic targets, which happen to be cities. They're going to be bombing New York City or, you know, the port of Los Angeles, or they're going to be bombing military bases in Colorado, you know, or Washington, D.C., for that matter. They're going to choose strategic targets, which happen to be cities. Living in the country makes you, takes you off the target list. Hope that makes sense. A food collapse, a medicine collapse, you know, lack of antibiotics. This is already happening because antibiotics are being overprescribed and we're getting superbugs, and pharmaceutical production is slipping big time globally. A climate collapse. A lot of people think that there's such a thing as human-caused climate change, even though we know that's a total hoax. But let's say they're right. Let's say the climate just suddenly collapsed. What would that affect? Well, it would be the cities more than anything else, because, again, the cities are dependent on all these artificial inputs, such as food, water, electricity, and so on. What about a fertility collapse? There's a lot of chemicals now in the water, chemicals in the food supply, a lot of gender bender herbicides such as atrazine, glyphosate, and many others. These are causing a fertility collapse. Well, where are the artificial chemicals most predominant in society? The answer is in cities, in indoor facilities, apartments, office buildings in the cities. Out in the country, you have less toxicity. So you're going to have higher fertility in the country and lower fertility in the cities. That means that over time, Democrats will tend to make themselves more and more, you know, extinct. And plus, also in the cities, and partially because of these gender bender chemicals, you have a lot of people becoming transgender. You have more gay couples and so on. And I don't know if anybody ever explained this to you, perhaps in the fifth grade, but to reproduce, you have to have a male and a female. You can't just have two males. They can't have a child, you know, biologically. They can adopt, but they can't create a child. And two females can't create a child. And a person who decides to be a transgender and surgically remove their reproductive organs obviously cannot reproduce. Now, of course, CNN lies to you about this and runs fake news stories claiming that men can get pregnant. That's CNN. I mean, their audience is so stupid that they think people believe that, and they're probably right, because if you watch CNN, you probably believe anything. So they literally broadcast that men can become pregnant, and they think that men have periods. They support, the installation of, you know, tampon machines in the men's restrooms of universities in California. This is actually happening. Now, I probably don't need to say this, but these are strategies that do not lead to a sustainable gene pool. These are strategies that, in essence, select themselves out of the gene pool. These people, in essence, you know, collectively win the Darwin Award by removing their genes from the future gene pool. The future of humanity belongs to a man and a woman having a child. It's simply stated. I mean, you can say that's politically incorrect, but I say nonsense. That's the way life has existed on this planet for the history of life as we know it. A man and a woman get together and create a child. And the child is a boy or a girl. Not something in between, not both, not your fairy unicorn, multi-gender species. No, it's a boy or a girl. And then that boy or a girl meets another boy or a girl, the opposite sex, and then they have a child. That's called sustainability of the human species, by the way. And it's reflected throughout nature. It's reflected throughout all mammals. This is a normal order of Mother Nature. This is how human civilization works. This is sustainability of life. And anybody who disagrees with that is just, you know, living in a twisted, delusional reality. So if you think about that, that's another thing that's going to cause a lot of Democrats to really kind of snuff themselves out over time, because they do not reproduce, you know, by definition. They, you know, they're cutting off their reproductive organs. They're giving themselves chemical castration. How do you think a transgender woman becomes a man, or vice versa? They take chemical pills for chemical castration. It's part of the medical way to go through transgender, you know, transitions. Chemical castration. They do it. That's you know, they are not going to participate in the future of the human gene pool, just by definition. You know, even Darwin would admit that. Darwin would freak out if he saw what was happening today, by the way. All right. Regardless of where you live, you have a body, which means you have basic biological needs for survival. And those needs include food, water, shelter, some basic medicine, you know, things like that. But the basics are food, water, and shelter. And again, because a city is an artificial construct, the food and the water are imported artificially, and the shelter, you got to include, you know, air conditioning and heating. That's also based on artificial fuels or electricity coming in from the outside. So cities may look like safe places, but they actually don't have much shelter. If you live in the country, you can probably go get water from a pond or a stream or a well, maybe a hand pump well, and you can use a water filter and you can have drinkable, safe water without much effort. I mean, most people who live in the country know where to get water. Most people who live in the city have no idea where to get water except out of the tap. And if push comes to shove, maybe they'll get it out of the toilet tank. But that's it. Beyond that, they have no idea where the water comes from. They literally do not know. They don't know where the food comes from. They just know it's at the grocery store. That's it. That's the extent of their knowledge. They don't know where electricity comes from. And without those things, they will panic. They will totally freak out. Country living gives you specific advantages. In all these survival scenarios, you are not only more decentralized. You know, country living is more self-reliant. Country living is, you're more dependent on yourself. You're not delegating, you know, 911 and all these services to somebody else. You are able to take care of yourself because you have to be to live on a farm or a ranch or to live 30 miles away from the nearest city, let's say, or more, 100 miles away. You know, I used to live in Wyoming, and Wyoming's got some pretty wide open spaces. You know, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Eastern Washington, some pretty wide open spaces. Good, safe places to be in any kind of a collapse, as long as you're able to take care of yourself. You've also got buffer space, I call it. And I sort of talked about this earlier, but buffer space means that you've got time before people can get to you. So let's say you're living in Eastern Washington, and you're worried about the outflux of people from Seattle when there's a collapse of the power grid. Well, most people who live in Seattle can't walk to Eastern Washington. They won't even get halfway across the state. Some of them won't even get 1 mile, frankly. So just physical buffer space is your friend. And so I want you to think about this, because there are major events coming. I can guarantee you that. I haven't had time to go into, you know, the risk probabilities and so on, but even NASA says space weather will cause a grid down collapse sooner or later. Where do you want to be when it all hits the fan? You want to be on the 25th floor of a high rise in a city surrounded by gangs and desperate non-preppers? Or do you want to be out in the country with very few people around, but a few good neighbors who are also themselves self-reliant, where you can protect yourself, where you got a food supply, you've got water, you don't need electricity, you won't die without it, you're going to be okay. You know, where do you want to be? Start making that decision now, because time is short. And we want you to make it. We want as many people as possible to survive, but the cities are death traps for all the reasons I've discussed here. So check out more episodes of Counterthink at real.video. It airs every Sunday at 6 p.m. at infowars.com. And my work you can read on my website at naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening today. I hope this was helpful. My name is Mike Adams, and this has been Counterthink.